In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, a chance and hope of my procuring. You will be visited by a blithering idiot who will shout into a microphone and talk about Christmas. Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just me, my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Shot Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Let's start with the interactive bit. What's going on? Huh? Well, pick it up then. And scene. So, boys and girls, I don't think I've got any housekeeping, so should we just get straight into it? Yes, we shall. Hit it. So boys and girls, this episode, do you know, I've noticed this. So my Christmas all over the world, lately, a lot of them have just been in the UK. So is it all over the world or should it just be a segment called Christmas in the UK? Well, it's all over the world. Let's just accept that. This one is about Tauld Hoss or the poor old hoss or the poor old horse from Richmond. And Richmond is in the county of York, sort of up north in the UK, and this custom involves dressing up as a horse but with like a real horse's head, and they'll get like a skull of a horse and like wire its jaw together so that they can open and close it, and they'll might cover it over with some cloth or something, and yeah, they go around from house to house. Now the origins are sketchy. It's probably or possibly originally a pagan custom, and could also be related to the Welsh Mary Lwyd. I hope I said that right. It's spelled M-A-R-I-L-W-Y-D. Yeah, not a vowel in sight in that second word there. And that's a similar tradition where they've got this old horse that they go around terrorising people with, I suppose. It ain't particularly attractive, I'll tell you that for nothing. And in the beginnings, I think it was very similar to wassailing, where they'd go house to house with the old horse, maybe singing songs and begging, really, trying to get goodies off people. And they used to have like a small band of guys, like with a fiddle, a fife and a drum, and they'd black their faces up. Now apparently the reason they'd black their faces up is not because they were raging racists, it was the best way to disguise yourself, so they could sort of go begging door to door at night and they wouldn't know who it was begging at their door, so the next day they can go, yeah, what are you doing coming around my house last night with that scary old horse skull scaring the crap out of my kids? Give me that money back, I'll give you. I believe that's what it was about. Anyway, that's why they do the old blackface. So this possibly started like over 1,000 years ago, but it was definitely recorded in the 17th century. But then it sort of fell out of fashion and not much happened about it. But then it was revived in Richmond in the early 20th century, and it was taken up by mummers. Now, I'm pretty sure I've talked about mummers before. What they are is they're a group that will go around at Christmas, usually to pubs, and they act out a play, and the play is sort of like a timeless thing, but also they incorporate jokes from modern news and that sort of thing. I was lucky enough to see a group of mummers a couple of times in my local where I used to live. Yeah, and they'd come round and they'd perform this play, and it's brilliant. I used to really enjoy it. Like, it would give you a really Christmassy feel seeing it. So in the old days, like I said, they'd go dressed up in blackface and whatever. Nowadays, the guys that accompany the horse, they dressed up a lot smarter in like riding gear, like posh riding gear. I don't know if you've ever seen the huntsmen in the UK where they wear their long red riding jackets and they might have a top hat on. Not so much top hats these days. Normally these days they'd have like a riding hat. But yeah, they wear top hats and their riding jackets and they accompany the horse. And throughout December, they go all around the local villages and towns, and they'll go in the daytimes, like on the weekends, they'll go in the shops and cafes and banks. And then in the evenings, they move on to the pubs and go from pub to pub and do their little act. And as they go into each one, they sing a song or recite a poem. about the old horse. And at one point, there were over 20 verses of this poem, but now there seems to just be 6 core ones. But then as they're going around, they'll choose which verses they'll sing, so they won't always sing all the verses. So I, boys and girls, you lucky buggers, I'm going to perform the poem for you. Are you ready? I don't know why I bother saying, are you ready? Like, what sort of preparation do you need for me to just recite a poem? It's like, hold on, Jake, let me take a seat. Let me brace myself. Let me put my seatbelt on. You gentlemen and sportsmen and men of courage bold, all you that's got a good horse, take care of him when he is old. Then put him in your stable and keep him there so warm. Give him good corn and hay, pray let him take no harm. Poor old horse, poor old horse. Once I had my clothing of linsey woolsey fine, my tail and mane of length, and my body it did shine. But now I'm growing old, and my nature does decay. My master frowns upon me, these words I heard him say. Poor old horse, poor old horse. These pretty little shoulders that once were plump and round, they are decayed and rotten, I'm afraid they are not sound. Likewise, these little nimble legs that have run many miles, over hedges, over ditches, over valleys, gates and stiles. Poor old horse, poor old horse. I used to be kept on the best corn and hay that in fields could be grown or in any meadows gay. But now, alas, it's not so, there's no such food at all. I'm forced to nip the short grass that grows beneath your wall. Poor old horse, poor old horse. I used to be kept up all in a stable warm to keep my tender body from any cold or harm. But now I'm turned out in the open fields to go to face all kinds of weather, the wind, cold, frost and snow. Poor old horse, poor old horse. My hide unto the huntsman so freely I would give, my body to the hounds, for I'd rather die than live. So shoot him, whip him, strip him, to the huntsman let him go, for he's neither fit to ride upon, nor in any team to draw. Poor old horse, you must die. Yeah, that's what happens. And at the end of it, the horse dies, but then he's resurrected, comes back to life, and they all gallop off into the distance, hopefully having been given loads of cash. But that is the story. So pretty much, it tells a story of how this horse was young and virile, and then he got old, and then he dies. It's the circle of life, boys and girls. The circle of life. At Christmas, it's what baby Jesus would have wanted. So there you go. If you're in Richmond, in Yorkshire, at Christmas, you might be lucky enough to see the poor old horse. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you know there are 14 muscles that are activated when making a drink? I know this because fitness is my passion. There was a TV show in the late 90s and the early 2000s called That 70s Show in the US, and it was focused on the lives of a group of 6 teenage friends from 1976 to 1979, living in Point Place, Wisconsin. The show is based upon 1970s nostalgia, and it dealt with social issues of the 70s, such as the evolving sexual attitudes, generational conflict, and economic hardships. But it also highlighted the fashion trends and the changes in the entertainment industry, like disco, VCRs, and Star Wars. It was also remade in England and called Days Like These, using the same scripts but with changes for cultural references. In the That 70s Show Christmas special, one of the friends, Kelso, is super excited to watch his favorite Rankin Bass Christmas specials, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and The Little Drummer Boy. His friends make fun of him and say that those shows are just for kids. He ends up having a dream in which he is a stop-motion character, and he shares his frustration with Rudolph, Santa, and the little drummer boy. Rudolph tells him that people used to laugh and call him names, and when Kelso asks him what did he do, Rudolph says he kicked them in the face, and Blitzen bled like a faucet. Here in the States, we might have appreciated that sentiment, but I am sure our UK friends felt their internal "Do you hear what I hear?" alarms being triggered. For you see, although the word faucet certainly does exist in Britain, it is not commonly used and is a much more specialized term among UK plumbers. It is considered Old English. In fact, some Brits might not even know what it means. Whereas in America, the faucet is how we describe the means to turn on and off the water supply in our homes. In the US, the faucet specifically refers to the plumbing fixture attached to the end of a water pipe, which is what the English would call a tap. They will use the word tap, while Americans say faucet, for that place in the kitchen where one gets their water from. Faucet is a term from the old French word faucet, meaning to bore, and was used to describe the stopper or peg used in the vent hole of a barrel. Since it was used to draw liquid from a container, you can see how it came to be used for a device that provides water. The word tap is even older, coming from German, but it has exactly the same meaning as faucet. It refers to drawing liquid from a barrel, such as from a beer cask. It is quite probable that there was a period in England where the words tap and faucet were used for the same thing. These are assumptions, but the word faucet was probably in use amongst the first immigrants to the US. But in England, tap was just becoming more prevalent. The odd thing is, tap is used in the USA as well, but usually related to beer being on tap. Or we say tap water and never faucet water. The more interesting question is, why do we use the word tap to describe the water that comes out of the faucet? You know, what we also lack here in the States is that classic old joke in the UK. My grandmother used to be a tap dancer, but gave it up when she kept falling into the sink. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Do you know, every episode, it's just so blooming interesting, isn't it? I love that one. And it's funny because I can imagine like some old show, like something like Downton Abbey or something like where they talk about the faucet. But also, modern day US, they talk about the faucet. But yeah, you don't hear anyone use that term in the UK to refer to the taps. Yeah, great one, Bob. He'll be back in a bit. But right now, we're doing this. So boys and girls, this is the second joke from the book one of my daughters got for Christmas last year, and it's brilliant. And when I say brilliant, it's not that bad. And when I say it's not that bad, it's not that good either. Are you ready? What song do cranberries sing at Christmas? 'Tis the season to be jelly. Get it? It was hilarious.
Humbug.
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 Humbug. Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is called Ebby, but it also has the title A Miracle at Christmas, Ebby's Story. And it was a TV movie originally released on December the 4th, 1995, making it 30 years old. And it was directed by George Kaxander and written by Paul Redford and Ed Redlich. Ebby is short for Elizabeth Scrooge, and she is played by the actress Suzanne Lucci. Now, I'd never heard of Suzanne Lucci, but apparently she was in the series All My Children for its entire run from 1970 all the way up to 2011, and she appeared in 1,717 episodes. Can you believe that? I can, because I'm clever. She's our Scrooge. I'll start off by saying she is very attractive, a very beautiful woman. She was 49 when she played this role. She looks far younger and is glorious, quite glorious. Now, this is a modern day retelling where Scrooge is a female in this one, and that seems like quite a popular trope of modern versions of A Christmas Carol. Like, oh, let's do something different. Let's make Ebenezer Scrooge a woman in modern day. It's been done before numerous times, but I think this might have been one of the first ones. Anyway, we open up in this department store. It's called Dobson's, and we get this window display, and it's like oldie-worldy animatronic window display, like you used to see in the good old days, and there's sort of stuff moving around, but then it starts to slow down and clunk a bit, and then it stops, and Ebby, well, that's who we find out she is, she notices what's happening, she comes out, and she's like stamping her foot on the floor, and it starts the machines going again, so she's like, fix them, because that's how you fix mechanical things, by stamping on the floor in a fit of rage. And as she's walking away, she turns to her assistant and says, yeah, I want those replaced. We're getting rid of them. So her assistant is called Robbie, which I believe is short for Roberta, and her surname's Cratchit. See what they did there? Yeah. So they're walking through the store, and she's got Cratchit running along behind her, and she's dishing out her bonuses, and they're all pretty disappointed. Like, everyone opens them up, they're like, oh, is that it? And we meet a few of the store characters. There's one, she goes up to this lady working on a counter, and she's got her earrings in, and Ebby's not impressed with her earrings. I don't know if they're a bit gaudy or what it is, but she just like grabs them and pulls them off because they're clip-ons, right? But did she know they were clip-ons? Because I couldn't tell they were clip-ons at a glance. Imagine that. That would have been a completely different film if they had not been clip-ons, just ripping out her earlobes. Don't wear earrings in my store. Who do you think you are? Yeah, it's not that kind of film. They were clip-ons. It's all fine. Then she dishes out bonuses to a lady that's doing like the gift wrapping, and there's a couple of girls, you know, like the perfume squirters that come up to her and go, oh, try this fragrance, madam. They come up and they sort of squirt her like, Merry Christmas, Mrs. Scrooge. She's like, get away from me. That sort of thing. As she's walking through the store, her niece comes up. Her niece is called Fran. Yeah, they've changed the gender of all of the male characters. Well, not all of them, some of them. So yeah, she's got a niece instead of a nephew, and she gives her a jar of jam for Christmas. Like, there you go, there's your Christmas present. Niece Fran is played by Molly Parker, who I instantly recognised because she played Alma Garrett in Deadwood. I don't know if you watched Deadwood, but she was in that. Yeah, it's been a lot of other stuff, but that was the one thing I knew her from. Of course, she invites Scrooge round for Christmas dinner. Scrooge's like, no, get away from me, I'm working and stuff. Then Cratchit, Robbie, says, oh, it's your 6 o'clock appointment. Now, her 6 o'clock appointment is with a couple of portly gentlemen. They're not particularly portly, but, you know, that's their role. And they're asking for a donation, which she's obviously not going to give. And they mention her previous partner, Jake Marley. And she says he died 1 year ago. So it was 1 year ago, not the 7 years in the book. Disappointing, but I'll let it slide. What annoyed me about this is the appointment's at 6 o'clock. And they're raising money for when? What, tomorrow? For Christmas Day? A bit late in the day, isn't it? To be, I suppose, if they got some soup kitchen, but I don't know. Anyway, there is a little bit in this interaction that I quite liked. Have a listen to this.
I grew up poor. I picked myself up by the bootstraps. So can others.
Well, some people don't even have boots.
Families without homes,
So let them get jobs. I pay my taxes. Aren't there shelters?
But many of them would rather die than go to some of those shelters.
Then that's their choice. There are too many people on this planet anyway.
But the children, we can't just turn our backs on the children.
I'm not saying turn your backs. Aren't there foster homes? Aren't there orphanages?
See, they've changed a few words there, but that stays sort of similar to the dialogue in the book. I kind of like that. Then Cratchit says she wants to leave, and Scrooge is like, yeah, fine, but I do need you to work on Christmas Day. You can have the morning with your family, but the rest of the day, you're coming into work. And she doesn't argue much. It's pointless, isn't it? Can't argue with Scrooge. And then Scrooge catches a shoplifter. He's putting like a leather wallet in his bag or something. And she goes up and catches him and says, oi, what's in your bag? And then the security guard turns up and she's like, you should have been there to catch that. Why am I doing your job? You're sacked. So she sacked the security guard. Then she leaves and she walks past the lady that's begging outside. And she's like, have you got any spare change? And Scrooge is like, I gave you a dollar the other day so that you'd move and beg somewhere else. And she's like, yeah, well, I'm here again now. So Scrooge don't give her any money. Then she gets back to her apartment building and the doorman's there. He answers the door. And over the doorman's shoulder in the background, she sees Jacob Marley. She's like, oh, Jacob Marley? And the doorman's like, you all right? She's like, yeah, I'm fine. And the doorman sort of wishes her a Merry Christmas, like he's after a tip or something for Christmas. And she's like, have this. And as she's handing him the jar of jam that Fran Nice gave him, she sees Jake Marley in the background again and drops the jam all over the floor. And she's like, oh, no, and rushes off. It's like, oh, what? Have I got to clean that up then? Well, I suppose some of it's still good. Doesn't matter if it's got little bits of glass in it. I can still eat it. It'll be fine. It'll be fine for Christmas. So now we cut to Scrooge in her apartment. She's watching TV. And as she's watching TV, Marley keeps appearing as the characters on what she's watching. So she changes the channel, he appears again, changes the channel, he appears again. The third time, Marley's got a TV zapper remote and he zaps her into the TV. So now she's in the TV. Yeah. And they go in this lift and Marley's doing like all this business talk. And then he gets a call from his boss. And I didn't like this bit much because it sounds like his boss is like pretty nasty. So like, who are you saying your boss is then? Like the devil or God? If it's God, well, he's not going to be nasty. But if it's the devil, well, surely the devil's not going to want Scrooge to change her ways. So that bit just bothered me a little, I suppose. Yeah, and we get this.
Change the agenda, Emmy. Reverse the priorities. I taught you everything.
Yes, Jake, you did.
And you know squat. You know the price of everything and the value of nothing.
And he says you're going to get 3 meetings. Because it's all business talk, you see. Very funny. And she says, can't we just do it as a conference call of all 3? Which I kind of liked, actually. Thought that was funny-ish. Then she's back in her room and we get the Ghost of Christmas Past. Now, there's 2 Ghosts of Christmas Past because they are the perfume girls. Yeah, that sprayed her earlier. Now, this is a thing that, well, it actually happened in the last version I talked about, where sometimes in A Christmas Carol, I don't know if they're trying to save money by not paying different actors, but characters that we've met earlier on become the ghosts. And I'm not a massive fan of it. It doesn't bother me massively, but I just don't really care for it. Don't make a lot of sense to me. Anyway, the Ghost of Christmas Past are these 2 Spritzer girls, and they're in like 60s dress, and they go back in time, and there's this man stood on a doorstep going, get back in here now, but don't bring that cat, because if you bring that cat, I'm gonna kill it. And there's a little girl sort of hiding with this cat in her arms behind a bush, and she's like, oh, I don't want to go back in there if he's gonna kill my cat. So she runs off, and the little girl's obviously a young Scrooge. Where does she go? But Dobson's department store, and she's there looking in the window at the old animatronic stuff. So they've been there all that time since she was a little girl. And as she's enjoying like looking at the machines and that, her sister turns up, her older sister, and she says, oh, why don't you and the cat come and stay with me for a bit? And she says she'll take the cat in, which is nice because she's a great big sister. And the sister is played by Molly Parker again, who played Fran, so she plays her own mum in this. So then we get to the next scene, and the Spritzer girls are now wearing sort of 70s dress. I say Spritzer girls, is that a word? Spritz? I suppose it is, isn't it? Yeah, perfume spritzers. Yeah. So now the young Scrooge is played by Suzanne Lucci. So we've got a 49-year-old woman playing a woman in her late teens, early 20s, I suppose. And I won't lie to you, it's fine. I mean, she looks older than 20, I suppose, but she still looks very young. Yeah, she looks very good for her age. She's got her hair down and she's wearing this lovely bright red dress because she's off to the Dobson's Christmas party. And her sister Fran is there. She's heavily pregnant. She's only got 5 weeks left. And she gives Scrooge a brooch in the shape of a Christmas tree, which sadly won't go on her dress, but she puts it on a coat and she loves it. She's nice. And then Scrooge goes off to her Christmas party and she turns up in the taxi and they've got Santa there and he opens the door and the Dobsons are waiting outside the store to welcome all the guests in. Oh, come on in, come and enjoy the party. And the ghosts are there talking about the party and saying, oh, it's just a big waste of money really, isn't it? But Scrooge defends them, just like in the book. You know, she's saying, no, it's not a waste of money. Don't you understand? The Dobsons were really nice people and they cared for us. And this guy comes up at the party and he chats her up and they have a dance. And as they're chatting, she realises it was the guy outside that was Santa Claus. And later on, she says, oh, I need to go back and see my sister again. She's heavily pregnant. So he, the guy, whose name is Paul, drives her to see her sister. When they turn up, there's a woman on the doorstep. No idea who this woman is, but she's like, yeah, she's not here. She's been rushed to hospital. So Paul drives all the way to the hospital. And we get a scene where her sister dies. Yeah, the baby's been born, but she dies, which is sad. And also very reminiscent of the Alastair Sim version, where we get the scene where the young Scrooge goes to see his sister when she's just passed away after giving birth. Then we move forward a bit, and they've gone back to this apartment she lived in with Paul, and they're madly in love, and they talk about they're getting married, and they're going to go to San Francisco for 3 days, but then she gets a call from work. So he's like, well, okay, I'll meet you there at the train station. So she's in this boardroom with the Dobsons and Jake Marley, and they're talking all business stuff. But then Paul turns up and he's like, can I have a word? And Dobson's like, you know, go on, it's fine, go and have a chat. Because they're really nice people. But Jake's like, yeah, don't be long, all right, don't be long. And he's like, look, you know, we've got to go, we're going to miss the train. And she's like, I can't go, this is far more important than going away on holiday. He's like, oh, you always put work before me, I'm going to have to go. And he leaves, and that's that. Then we move forward again to the 80s now, and the Spritz girls have got another outfit change, and Scrooge has got a hairdo very similar to Margaret Thatcher. I thought, yeah, she's got all got it up. And Scrooge and Marley have bought out the Dobsons, and they bought all their shares from underneath them and have taken over the store, and so the Dobsons have to leave. And again, that was quite similar to what happens in the Alastair Sim version. They buy out Fezziwigs at one point, don't they? But then there's also another bit where they take over their old boss's firm as well. So that reminded me of that quite a bit. And the Dobsons are actually quite magnanimous that they've sold their stores. They're cool about it because, you know, they've had a good life. And now they've got more time to spend with their family. So they're cool about it, but still a bit underhanded. Then we move forward to the 90s. And this is only 1 year ago from present day. And Scrooge and Marley have gone out for dinner and they're talking about their takings for Christmas. But Marley's thinking about the past and maybe they should have been a bit nicer and that. And then he dies and collapses at the table and that's it. And then she goes back to her apartment in modern day. So now we get the Ghost of Christmas Present. Now the Ghost of Christmas Present, she's there. They haven't gone for like piles of food like in the book, but she is sat on piles and piles of Christmas presents and wrapping paper and that. And she is dressed a bit like a wrapped up present. And she was the lady who received her bonus earlier on, who was doing the wrapping up the presents in the store. The Ghost of Christmas Present clicks her fingers, right? And they're suddenly in a taxi. And they're driving a taxi and she's got a bit of paper and she holds it out to the driver and says, here, take us to this address. There's no one driving the taxi. They're in the back seat. There's no one in the front seats. This is insane, isn't it? And they're driving along chatting and then they drive past this little boy on crutches and some comments made about, oh, you know, it must be crap having crutches or whatever. And then the ghost clicks her fingers again and they turn up at the Cratchits. Now, here's one for you. Why bother with the whole taxi bit? Okay, just cut out the middle man. Click your fingers, you're in a taxi. Click your fingers again, you're in the Cratchits. Why not just click your fingers once, you're in the Cratchits. Saved on a taxi fare, which they ran off without paying anyway, but doesn't matter, because there's no taxi driver. Let's just move on. They're at the Cratchits house, and I like this, because the daughter, she's only got a son and a daughter, not like six kids like the Cratchits have got. But the daughter is called Martha, just like in the book. I like that. And Tim turns up on his crutches. It was the little boy they'd just seen. And Tim is played by Taron Noah Smith, who played Mark Taylor in Home Improvement. So this was while he was doing Home Improvement, actually. I think it would have been around about the second or third series. Yeah. You know, he quit acting after Home Improvement and just went off and created some food company or something. Yeah. Anyway, Tim gives his mum decorations that he's made. And they mentioned that he broke the star that morning. It was an accident. Didn't do it in a fit of rage. It was all an accident. And then Cratchit, or Robbie, she has to go off to work. And Scrooge's dialogue with the Ghost of Christmas Present is quite similar to the book at this point. I kind of like that. And then Tim sings Angels We Have Heard on High just before she goes off to work. Then we cut to Fran's party. And Scrooge says this.
She looks so much like her mother, my sister.
Yeah, she looks just like her mother. I'm not surprised. It's the same blummin' woman, isn't it? Of course she looks like her mother. It's like she looks like herself. Of course she looks like herself. She is herself. Goodness. And they're all singing around this piano. That's nice. There's no games played. They're just singing around the piano. And they raise a toast to Auntie Scrooge. And Fran doesn't take a sip of her champagne after she's toasted. And Scrooge is like, oh, she won't even sip her champagne after she's made a toast to me. And the ghost is like, hang on a second. And they go upstairs and there's loads of baby stuff, isn't it? Because she's pregnant. Which, I don't know if you remember this, but about a year ago, I did a segment where I talked about the fact that I was pretty sure that Fred's wife was pregnant. So I don't know if they stole my idea 30 years after I come up with it. I stand by that still as well, I'm pretty sure. Every time I read the book, it sounds to me like she's pregnant. The hints are there. Then, this was funny, this was, because right, we cut to Paul, her ex-love. And I was like thinking, oh, I know what's going to happen. He's going to be single. And he's going to be thinking, oh, I wonder whatever happened to Ebby. And they're going to end up together at the end of the film. But no, he's there with a wife and family. And I really like that. I thought, cool, they're not going to try the easy option of getting them back together again. He's moved on and she gets to see what it could have been like. Now, really, this should have been part of the Ghost of Christmas Past, as it is in the book. But I still stand by it. Still think it's all right. I'm glad they added that bit. I thought they did a good job. Very good job. Because you don't see that in a lot of the regular versions, let alone modern day versions. So well done for having that scene in there. Yeah, so that scene is pretty much just Paul saying, you know, I was thinking about an ex-girlfriend, wonder what she's up to now. And his wife's cool with that. She's very beautiful and they've got two kids upstairs playing with their Christmas toys. So, yeah. Then they go back to Ebby's apartment and we actually see ignorance and want. Although they don't call them ignorance and want. They call them ignorance and poverty. Which is fine. I'm happy with that. And, yeah, they're sort of rummaging around underneath all like the wrapping paper and the big heap that she was. Do you remember at the start I said she was on a pile of presents and that? They're sort of rummaging around there. That's the end of the Ghost of Christmas present. Then we get the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. And the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is the security guard that she sacked earlier on. And first off, they go to the Cratchit's house. And Robbie's just been to the cemetery. And Tim has sadly passed away. That's a really sad scene. Then we go to the Dobsons. And Dobson's has gone out of business, and a couple of other retailers, which are actually the Portly Gents from earlier on, they're stood outside talking about it. There you go, have a listen.
Ironic, isn't it? They forced her out the same way she ate up Dobson.
Well, I wish I could muster some sympathy for her, but I can't. Money is all she ever cared about.
I thought that was an interesting way of doing it, having the Portly Gents as the businessman in the street. Yeah, I didn't mind that. Then this woman's sort of walking past, and she's sort of like got a hood over her head as she's walking along, and she gets hit by a car. Turns out that was Scrooge, and it cuts to the hospital, and she's just laying there, and the nurses are there saying, you know, I can't believe she hadn't had any visitors. No one loved her. And then she flatlines, and she passes away. And just before she dies, she's saying this.
Why show me all this if I'm all past hope? I know I can make things better by being better. I will honor Christmas and I will keep it in my heart, past, present, and future. Please. Please.
And I like that. That's very close to the book. I didn't mind that. I thought it was okay. Then she wakes up and it's snowing outside and she laughs because she's so happy and she says to herself, when did I last laugh? And I kind of like that because in the book it talks about how Scrooge laughs when he wakes up and he hasn't laughed in a long, long time. I thought that was cool. We don't get a boy in the street. Instead, we get Ralph the doorman. Do you remember from earlier on? And she phones down. She says, Ralph, what day is today? Etc. Then she lets down her hair, puts on the same red dress she wore all those years ago. And she's also got the brooch. Do you remember the brooch that her sister gave her when she was going to the same party? She puts that on. And as she's leaving, she gives the doorman a great big tip, which is nice. Then she goes to the shop and she gets a turkey delivered to the Cratchit's house. And she goes to Dobson's to pick up loads of presents. And as she's leaving Dobson's, do you remember the homeless lady that was outside? She gives her this massive coat and she says, come and see me the day after Boxing Day and we can look into getting you a job if you want one, which is nice. And then as she's walking down the street, she sees one of the Portly Gents. Again, I like this. I don't know if this was something they did on purpose, but in the book, on Christmas Day, Scrooge only sees one of the Portly Gentlemen. Now, you don't often see that. Normally, he sees both of them in the street. But in the book, it is actually only one of them. And she saw one of them walking down the street, and she gives him a donation. Then she gets to go in a taxi, and the person driving the taxi is the Ghost of Christmas Present, the person who worked for her, doing the wrapping. And Scrooge's like, oh, what are you doing driving this taxi? And she says, oh, I work two jobs. A lot of people that work at Dobson's work two jobs. And she says, not anymore. I will be giving everyone big pay rises. Hooray! And she gets the taxi driver, or the Ghost of Christmas Present, or the lady that does the wrapping. They're all the same person. Gets them to give her a lift to the Cratchits. And she's bought a star for the tree. And she has loads of presents for him. And she gives Robbie a promotion. And she offers some better health insurance. And she gets Robbie to rehire Luther. Sorry, that was the name of the security guard who was the Ghost of Christmas Future. And she also wants her to refurb all the Christmas decorations they've got in the windows of the stall. And it's pretty much tying up all the loose ends from earlier on. I thought they did that a nice tidy way. Well done on that one. Then she goes to see her niece Fran and gives her some baby clothes. She's like, how did you know? She says, well, us women know these things because I was visited by three ghosts. She doesn't say that, but that's how she knew, not because she knows these things. And finally, she goes back to the Cratchits to share dinner with them. And Tim says this.
And God bless us. God bless us, everyone.
And finally, it ends with them all singing Angels We Have Heard on High. And you know what, boys and girls? I didn't mind it. I mean, it's quite low rent. It was made for TV. But As modern versions with a female protagonist go, I thought they'd done a really good job of it. Yeah, I didn't mind it at all. I don't know if I'll ever watch it again, but I'm glad I did watch it this time. So maybe you could give it a shot. It's called Ebby. It's on YouTube if you want to watch it. And yeah, why not check it out? Now, boys and girls, we're doing this.
Where are you, Christmas? How about York, England, and some other assorted English places? We have listener Martin Goodman to thank for drawing our attention to Jack's backyard and some merry destinations. We turn to England, a country where centuries of holiday traditions have shaped the way we all celebrate Christmas. We start first with a German shop that is located in the heart of York. Martin sent us a link to the Kathy Wolfert shop, which is filled to the brim with nutcrackers, ornaments, and cuckoo clocks. The store is located in Mulberry Hall, one of the oldest and most beautiful houses in York. This historic, half-timbered building was built in 1434. With a Tudor-style facade and combined with the old city charm of York, it creates an immersive, festive experience that's positively Christmassy, no matter the season. Now, it's a bit of a hike, 155 miles, but nestled in the riverside village of Ironbridge is the Mrs. Claus Kitchen, oozing Yuletide charm and named one of the best Christmas shops in Britain. They do festive food and decorations all year round, serving mince pies, Christmas pudding and cake, fruit cakes, and turkey and cranberry sandwiches with all the trimmings throughout the year. They also offer a Christmas-themed afternoon tea. Finally, after driving another 142 miles, you can stay at a Christmas-themed retreat in the heart of Cheddar Gorge and literally built into the cliff face. Deep in the heart of the Somerset countryside, you will find the charming small village of Cheddar, famed for its cheese. The cottage enjoys views of the River Yeo, pond and waterfall, and is decorated for Christmas throughout the year. Its year-round commitment to cozy hospitality makes every visit feel like a scene from a Christmas movie, and it is located directly above the Old Rollins Christmas Shop. Now, if you know of another historic place that seems plucked from a snow globe, you serve it up to Jack, he'll dress it up for me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
You know, I've been to Cheddar Gorge a couple of times. I knew nothing about this place. Nothing at all. So unless it's a more recent thing. But yeah, another great one from Bob there. If you visit in the UK, go and visit those places. If you already live in the UK, go and visit those places. Great work as ever, Bob. And thanks to Martin Goodman for sending through the suggestions. If you're not listening to Bob's podcast, latest episode was a blinder because I was on it very briefly. And he's doing his recap of the last year's films that they've covered. You should check it out. It's a great podcast. Festive foreign film fans. Have a listen, boys and girls. You know you love it. Now let's do this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Boys and girls, it is time now for the quiz. And first up, I've got to give the scores from last episode. So, with 6 points was Frank Talley. Yeah, 6 points. That was the lowest anyone sent me. Then with 7 points, we had Martin Goodman, John Gomez, Mary Pulte, and Guy Sawyer. With 8 points, Pamela Wootton. With 9 points was Adam Parker from the Merry Britsmas podcast, Jack Umberferth, Scott Newman from Tinsel Tunes, and Lauren Morley. And with 10 points, lording it up again, although I scored 10 as well, is Mike Westfall. That's twice in a row that Mike has got the highest score. So great work again there, Mike. Mike from the Advent Calendar House, of course. Oh, which will be coming back soon. When this episode comes out, we'll only be about a week away from Mike's first episode of the Advent Calendar House. I'll plug it now while I'm at it. If you don't listen to the Advent Calendar House, every episode, Mike talks about TV holiday specials, but mostly the Christmas ones. And that's pretty much it. He goes much more in depth than I do, and him and his guests are always very knowledgeable on the subject. He releases them every other day in July and December. So yeah, check it out when it comes out, which will be about a week's time from when this comes out. Well, start of July, that's when it'll be, won't it? Of course it will. Right, now, let's see if Mike can keep up his run, because here comes this episode's quiz. Question number one. For Unto Us a Child is Born is from which famous piece of music? Any ideas? Okay. Question number two. Franz Xaver Gruber and Father Joseph Moore wrote which famous carol? Next one. In what language were the original lyrics to O Come, O Come, Emmanuel? Sorry, I should have said this at the start. The first five questions are all Christmas carol related, and the next five are going to be all about movies. This is just the nature of this book that I'm reading them from, okay? We've discussed this before. You should know that. Okay, next one. What once stood in Royal David City? What once stood there? They might still have one standing there now. Probably do. But what once stood there, according to the song? Next one. Where did the ship sail to in I Saw Three Ships? I saw three ships come sailing in, come sailing in, come sailing in. Yeah, where did they sail to, though? Where did they sail it? Next one. What movie was the first to feature the song I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas by Bing Crosby? Okay? Okay. Next one. At which airport does John McClane arrive in Die Hard? Not the second one. Or the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, or tenth film in the first Die Hard film? Which airport does John McClane arrive at? Okay, next one. Whom, I ask you, is the central character in The Man Who Invented Christmas? Okay. Next one. Billy Bob Thornton played Willie T. Stokes in which grown-up Christmas classic? And the last one, you might find this a bit tricky. What is the name of Bill Nye's character in Love Actually? Bill Nye's character. He's a pop singer. What is the character's name, though? Okay, those are your 10 questions. Here come your 10 answers. So question number one. For Unto Us a Child is Born is from which famous piece of music? Well, I thought it was Greensleeves. For Unto Us a Child is Born. It isn't at all. It's Handel's Messiah. I wasn't even close. Shame on me. Question number two. Franz Xaver Gruber and Father Joseph Moore wrote which famous carol? Well, that was Silent Night. Yeah. Well, easy one if you knew the answer. Which I did. Yes! Question number three. In what language were the original lyrics to O Come, O Come, Emmanuel? Well, I didn't put anything. I sort of, back of my head, I thought, well, I don't know, German, is it? Well, it wasn't. It was Latin. Okay? Latin. We're all talking it. Question number four. What once stood in Royal David City? Well, I shall answer that in a song. Once in Royal David City stood a lowly cattle shed. Yeah, a lowly cattle shed. Okay? Okay. Where did the ship sail to in I Saw Three Ships? Well, apparently the answer is Bethlehem, which is what I put. But then I thought, I'm going to look this up. And let me tell you, boys and girls, Bethlehem is 42 miles from the coast. 42 miles. So you tell me, boys and girls, how are those ships getting to Bethlehem? Huh? Huh? Well, I suppose it could be rivers. But still, I'm doubting it. I'm doubting it. I don't even know if it's true. It might not have even happened. I don't know. Right. Next one. What movie was the first to feature the song I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas by Bing Crosby? That was, of course, Holiday Inn. Yeah, I watched it once, didn't think much of it. Question number something. At which airport does John McClane arrive in Die Hard? Well, don't forget, he's a New York cop, but he's going to visit his wife in Los Angeles. Los Angeles International Airport. Next one. Whom is the central character in The Man Who Invented Christmas? That is Charles Dickens. I don't know if you've seen the film, but it's all about Charles Dickens writing A Christmas Carol. And I watched it and I really enjoyed it, and I should really cover it one time on the podcast. But, you know, got other things to do. Next one. Easy one. Billy Bob Thornton played Willie T. Stokes in which Christmas classic? Bad Santa, of course. Or I would also accept Bad Santa 2. And the final question, what is the name of Bill Nye's character in Love Actually? Well, I won't lie to you kids, I got this one, but I was sitting there racking my brains. Yeah, it did take a little while for it to pop back up, but it's Billy Mack. That's who Bill Nye plays. So there we go, boys and girls. That was your 10 questions and 10 answers. All you got to do now is send me a quick email telling me what you scored. Do it, kids. Do it right now. Have you done it? But why not? Go and do it! Well, we do this. Boys and girls, I've found a new podcast and I absolutely love it. But the only problem is, each episode is only about 20 minutes long and there's only about 40 odd episodes out there. So I could fly through this in 1 week's worth of gardening, which is a shame really, because I could listen to it all day. So I'm having to ration myself an episode every couple of days so I don't get through it too quickly. The podcast is called It's a Fair Cop. And if you want a true crime podcast, well, you can't get any more true than this. Let me read out the blurb for you. Policeman turned stand-up comedian Alfie Moore gets his audience to make the policing decisions as he takes them through real-life crime scenarios. So Alfie Moore used to be a policeman. And what he does is he talks to you about a crime that he's had to investigate. And as he goes through the stages of the crime, he asks the audience what they do in that situation. Because each episode is recorded before a live audience. And people shout out what they think he should have done. And he tells you what did happen. And it's really interesting. And it's also really, really funny. It's one of the best podcasts out there, I'd say. Or at least one of the best podcasts that I listen to. So, yeah, check it out. It's called It's a Fair Cop with Alfie Moore. And it's on BBC Sounds, and I believe you should be able to find it on Apple iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a listen. And that is it for this episode. If you haven't already paused the podcast and emailed me your quiz score, better go and do it now. I want to say a big thank you, of course, to Bob Baker for his fantastic segments. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. You can email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go on the website totalchristmaspodcast.com, or you can have a look at me on Facebook. Well, I don't do much on there. I keep forgetting to update it, really. Yeah, terrible like that I am. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Happy Christmas.
Are you quiet yourself, sir?
What? I don't know. No, I don't think so. I hope not.